Welcome back, everybody, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. Today's topic is about adult child support. It's not a topic that often comes up in family law practices, but it is a topic that recently came up with one of my clients when I was filing for divorce. They had a teenage son about to be a major, about to graduate from high school, and not a word was spoken about any reasons for child support to be carried on past the date of graduation. I subsequently got a call from them a couple years after the divorce was final, and all of a sudden adult child support came up in conversation. I referred that piece of business out, but I wanted to circle back with this podcast and explore it because it does require special consideration. Also, my sister, Jerry McFadden, there's an episode I did with her a couple weeks ago, and look for it on my directory of episodes. She had adult child support when she got divorced many, many years ago, and I didn't even really think about it like that. I wasn't in the divorce business, and it's her middle child that was diagnosed at a very young age with enough issues that it was ascertained that he probably would not be able to support himself once as an adult. And they were right. So with that in mind, I have invited somebody who is going to teach us a lot about adult child support. Her name is Armini Baltazar. She's a managing partner in the law firm, the family law firm, Hammers and Baltazar. And Armini is a mediator and family law attorney. Welcome, Armini.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming here. This is so important that we educate the public about this. So I'm just going to start asking you questions.
Go for it.
Okay? Please define the legal standard for adult child support. What is it? How do we know when it's supposed to be part of the divorce process?
Well, it's obviously for a child who's no longer a minor, so that's why they're an adult. And it's for a child who is disabled. And that's something that we legally define. And a child is considered disabled in this way if two things. One, they're incapacitated from earning a living, and they are without sufficient means themselves. So a child might be incapacitated from earning a living, but maybe they're a trust fund recipient from grandma or grandpa. If they have the sufficient means, then that prong has already been met. It's not relevant. So there wouldn't be child support in that case. So incapacitated from earning a living and insufficient means, both of those.
So there are two times when you can deal with or address adult child support. A, when the divorce is going on and there are minor children,
right.
And B, after the divorce, right?
Right.
Okay, we're going to circle back to that.
Yeah.
I wanted to go through this in kind of an evolving information about what adult child support is. So when determining whether it's during the divorce or after the divorce is final, when determining justification for adult child support, what's the hardest issue, or what are the hardest issues when determining?
It really depends on what your case is, but you might have a hard issue right at the very beginning. Is this child disabled from earning a living, for example? It might be really easy to tell with a child who has certain physical disabilities. Some cases are totally undisputed. But sometimes where it's more mental, emotional, there might be a dispute whether really this child has the kinds of disabilities that rise to the level of warranting adult child support. Once you get past that hurdle, you might have other really difficult issues. Like, it's still really important what each parent's income is. And so people often argue about what is somebody's income, especially when it's not a salaried employee that's really easy to tell. Maybe it's somebody who has their own business, and then you start going into all kinds of issues about well, what is this person's income? And so, you know, you start having arguments like that.
So the two examples I gave when I opened this episode, my sister, when she was getting divorced, her middle child, they already knew, was going to be incapacitated to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. They tested him a lot. He was 9 mm-hmm. at the time of the divorce, and this was 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. He was 9. It was well known he couldn't be in regular school. Not only did he have emotional issues, but math and English, writing, reading, and counting were right. going to be his difficulties. Then I gave the other example of I filed for a divorce, amicable divorce, so to speak, so with both people. They had a child ready to graduate from high school in a year or two. Not a peep about any disabilities. And then 2 years later, after the divorce is final, I got the calls. Now they're talking about adult child support. So let's look at during the divorce.
Right.
The emotional issues, which you said are the more difficult to deal with. Physical, yes, you can tell whether somebody has the physical capacity to do what. I mean, right. something, anything. But emotional is difficult. So during the divorce, if it's more of an emotional consideration, does the age matter? So an adolescent versus a teenager. A teenager is more developed than an adolescent, right? So you're clearer with a teenager where that child can go in terms of employment, but not so much as an adolescent. So what do you do in both of those cases with two different age ranges and you're in the middle of the settlement agreement?
Yeah. If the kids are minors, whether teenage or adolescent, there's going to be child support no matter what, right? Because they're still minors. So there's going to be a child support order for that time, no matter what. It in that case just becomes an issue of how much should it be? Are there other special needs? Is there a special school? Are there other expenses that should be added in addition to whatever the regular child support should be? So you're never going to have the initial question of should it be ordered, because they're minors and there'll be support for them if the, you know, if the numbers bear that
right,
out.
Right, right.
But you can't really tell from then whether there's going to be a future amount. I mean, that's something that you would be, whenever you have your trial, if you end up going to trial, you might decide, the court might decide, yes, I think from now that there's going to be support past the age of minority, and so I'm not going to put the regular cutoff date, the regular time.
Right,
but I'm going to say, let it continue thereafter. Or the court might decide, you know what, we're going to put it as regular child support. Yes, this child has more needs. You guys split that cost or however that's allocated so that it's covered while they're a child. And maybe the court can say, we're just going to leave it regular duration. But if something happens, if there's a continuing need, you can always come back to court afterward and, you know, request the assistance. So I've not had a case where we've litigated while they were minors and decided from then that, yes, for sure, it's going to go forward. It might be that it might make most sense in a lot of cases where the disability isn't so clear to leave the regular time frame in place. And then if there's a continued need before that time frame expires, somebody can always
reopen.
Go back into
yeah.
the court. Yeah, there's nothing that says, because you didn't cover it or address it like your sister's case, because you didn't address it what
like
your initial...
Like my previous client
that's
who didn't
right.
address it, it never came
it
up.
It doesn't matter at all. In fact, there's a lot of cases where you may not even know the extent of the disability. Maybe the child is somehow, you know, there's some social awkwardness, there's what seems to be a shyness and so forth, and maybe there's even a diagnosis. But you don't know how much it's going to limit that child's ability to work and support themselves. They may find a job that's perfectly suitable to their emotional needs. That might exist out there. So a lot of times you do need a little bit of the time to see what is going to happen in this child's life. Now, we're talking about now the cases where that aren't as obvious as, say, a completely disabled child who you know is not right. going to ever be able to support themselves. You know, we're talking more about the sort of in between ones. Well, let's see. Maybe there is something that fits.
Okay, so you brought up so many great things. In the case of my nephew, John, and he was 9 at the time of my sister's divorce, it was clear he needed a special school and he had all these diagnostic tests to explain where the disabilities were. But as he got older, and I mean after he graduated from high school, he does work. He has a part-time job at a grocery store. As he got older, though, it showed that he was more high-functioning than they thought because he had mitigated all of the emotional clouds mm-hmm. that went before the physical disabilities, physical meaning mental. Mm-hmm. And through his love of rap music, believe it or not, and the liner notes on CDs, he taught himself to read.
Wow. Yeah.
And he can kind of a little bit write messages.
Right.
His command of the English language is shockingly phenomenal. So we now think he may have a little bit of a savant in him, although he's 35 years old. My sister is now looking into maybe independent living, and he wants to live on his own. And I was quite surprised. I said, but he can't count. He can't really read enough to deal with bills. And there's no trust in place to handle this. They don't have that kind of
right,
money.
Right.
So that kind of factors into what you said. You kind of have to wait and see as time goes on, right?
Yeah,
how much
for sure.
this person can actually do and earn.
For sure. And ideally, this child, if you've identified the problem, is getting help while they're young. They're getting resources. They're learning tools.
Yes.
I mean, hopefully we're all growing and learning, right? But
yes.
you don't know what that's going to open up for the child. And they may find something like what you said about John and how he related to the music and the notes. And, you know, you may find that the child is particularly drawn to the arts, music. So it's not uncommon that there be some disabilities, but there's an area that fits, and maybe they can find work in that area.
Yes.
And with general growth, you know, things change. Now, I've also seen it be the other way. A child who you don't suspect has any challenges in that way, they have a break at one point, or, you know, some things, I'm not a medical professional, but, you know, I've seen just in my personal life as well, somebody who's diagnosed with mental disorder as soon as they got into college. You
right,
wouldn't have
known. It doesn't show.
You wouldn't have known earlier.
Right.
You know, great student. She was really top of class. And then everything kind of
crashes
appeared.
Yeah.
yeah. And then all the challenges appeared. Yeah.
You also said something else. You said, well, if you go to trial, then, you know, the judge will come in and ask questions. Is this something, the issue of adult child support, that's generally an issue that is resolved in the courthouse? Or do you, as an attorney mediator, can they settle just between the two parents and their two legal representatives? Or is this something that kind of has to go to the court? Is it serious?
You know, nothing has to go to the court.
Right.
Absolutely. People can come and sit with a mediator and try to reach a resolution. Once that resolution is reached, if they want to have it drawn up as a legally binding document, you know, you can do that. Right? We would write what the agreement is, and then we can file it with the court so that they still have the same, you know, result of having an order. But how they reached it is by agreement through mediation. And the beauty of mediation is that it's a setting where you can be made aware of what the law is, but then you realize that the law is only one guidepost in how you reach your agreement. There's other things. There's your sense of fairness. There's what you want to see happen for your child. There's a relationship that you want to preserve to whatever extent with your ex-spouse. All these things might reach you to a solution that is what the law would do or isn't what the law would do, but that works for you and your family and your child, right?
Yes, yes.
And the thing to remember, too, is that in this area specifically, courts have a lot of discretion. They have a lot of choice about what to order. They really look at it as a case-by-case basis.
Perfect. Now, when we talked earlier, you were describing what those vehicles are that would determine the need for adult child support, some testing. What do you go, vocational tests? Talk about the types of things available to people to look at the extent of the issues with the child and the need for adult child support.
Of course, sometimes people agree, right,
right,
that this child needs some help. This child can't support herself. But if there's a dispute about that, one tool you could use is go to a vocational evaluator.
So what does that mean? Yeah, go ahead.
A vocational evaluator is like a job expert, right? It's like a career and job expert. And what they do is anybody can go to a vocational evaluator, and that person looks at what your job history is, your education is, and some things that are very specific to you, like, do you have any physical limitations? Do you have any mental, emotional limitations? And then they look at the job market and they see, and they try to determine, this person with this education, training, work history, limitations can probably earn this much doing this in this market. They also do kind of market specific things. So if you're trying to determine what the person, what the child can earn, or if you have a dispute about really what's the most the person is capable of, it could be a helpful tool to go to a job expert, a vocational evaluator.
That understands this field.
You know,
because isn't this a special field for vocational evaluators?
It is a special field. I mean, you're not going to ask that person to suddenly become a medical expert, right? Because they assess people with all kinds of medical issues and how they fit in the job market. I mean, if I can't walk or I can't do lifting, that's a limitation that the career expert has to consider. It sure helps to have an expert that is more receptive to, you know, can understand better the limitations the way they're written in the medical reports, because they might have to review those things as well. And there are some out there who also have some background in socio-emotional, or maybe they have an MFT degree as well, a marriage family therapy degree. So some are also counselors, in general counselors,
yes,
not just a career counselor.
Right.
So that's nice to have somebody who is so sensitive to that.
I would assume if both parents are represented by legal counsel, you would each throw a name in the hat of a vocational evaluator for an adult child support situation?
Yeah, if there's a dispute about that and people really want one,
okay,
the mediator can suggest names, or in traditional litigation, that's what they do. I mean, you know, you try to reach an agreement on, okay, let's hire this person. If it's really bad and you can't, then like anything else, you give it to a judge and have
right,
a total stranger decide, you know, what should be happening for your life.
So we talked about during the divorce. How about after the divorce is final? Either issues that were with the child kind of surface more, or something happens, an outside incident happens after the child is no longer a minor that disables them.
An accident.
Physically or mentally.
Yes.
Can you go back to the court or go back to the discussion table, the mediation table, and open up an adult child support conversation?
Unquestionably, yes. there is no limitation because there was a gap period where perhaps there was no child support. It was a, you know, completely self-sufficient child, and then something happened in the child's, I say child, adult child, in the mid-30s, in the mid, you know, whatever.
Really? Okay, so yes, that was going to be my next question.
You can absolutely go back.
I get that once they're right out of high school, maybe a few years after that, but I was going to ask, what if they're in their 30s or 40, and the parents are still alive?
There's no limitation in the law at all. Now, the parents are alive, child's mid-30s. Maybe the parents are in their 60s, 70s, who knows? First of all, one of them going to be seeking the child support from the other? Because, you know, it may be that nobody even asks for it. Nobody seeks it. Maybe the child is getting social services, is getting state aid, and the parents, they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
When I've seen it happen, it's because one parent has taken on the burden of the expenses, and they're like, okay, I can't do this by myself. I need more help from the other parent. And so then they approach them about getting more help. And if they can't reach an agreement on that on their own, then they'll seek the help of a mediator or, you know, if they must, they'll file with the court if that doesn't work.
Right. And I always like to say to people listening to this show, the court is there to help you, not hurt you. Don't use court as a weapon. Use it as an option that will do for you what you're having a difficult time doing for yourselves, which is coming to agreement.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah,
I
really want to change the perception of the court as a battleground versus a helpful environment to resolve an issue.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I agree completely.
Yeah, people need that. All right, so now, what if you have parents where possibly the payor is ready to retire and their income will be less? That's always taken into consideration, I guess.
Yes, it will be taken into consideration, of course, because the duties to support is, you know, it's tied to your ability to support. You know, the law says, to the extent of your ability. Now, the court will assess that. I mean,
yes.
And all kinds of things go into that. I mean, you may have a lot less income, but you may be sitting on a whole lot of money that you're not making good use of. You know, and then we come into all kinds of legal discussions about this person could be making money. What about the interest that could be, you know, earned off that? There's all kinds of legal theories about income and what kind of income we would consider. So that whole world kind of opens up, you know.
One of the biggest issues or decisions that have to be made when you're in the middle of a divorce filing is quite often who would the quote-unquote custodial parent be? Who would be the parent who would have the child more if it can't be an even division of time?
Right.
So fast forward to divorce is over, child is in their 30s. Let's just pick a decade. Child is in their 30s. Something has happened, debilitated, completely changed that adult child's ability to earn a living. How is the custodial parent decided? Is it kind of organic? You kind of know who is better suited? How do you do that?
That's a great question. Because let me back it up to say that in general, child support is determined by a guideline formula in California, and you plug in a bunch of numbers and you get what the child support amount is. That's kind of basic child support.
And one of the numbers is the percentage of time the child
right.
is with each
like
parent.
The two
right?
main things that go into that formula are how much time does each parent have with the child and what are their respective incomes. I mean, other things too, but those are the two main things. So what do you do with a child who's in their 30s and maybe they are living on their own in assisted facility, right? So how do you allocate the percentage? Well, case law has developed around that and said what you do is you allocate it based on who has responsibility, not custody, but responsibility. So there's this case from years back where 19-year-old child is living away in a facility and a school district is paying for, you know, most of the expenses, but there's still some need. So they're still having an argument about child support. And in that case, the court said, we're going to give dad 100, we're going to assume that dad has 100% custody, even though the child doesn't live with dad. Why? Because when the child isn't at the facility, in that case anyway, they reasoned it by saying when the child isn't in that facility, the child's living with dad. Dad signed the agreement with that place. Dad takes responsibility for things having to do with the child's life in a way that mom didn't. And in that case, that's how they decided. It doesn't mean it'll always be 100% and zero the way it was there. People can, if they want to go to a court and argue about it, they absolutely can argue, I'm the primary responsible parent because when there's a meltdown, the child comes to me. I signed on the child's lease. I'm the parent who takes the child shopping. So you can have this kind of discussion about really who has primary responsibility or what's the allocation of responsibility. So the key becomes who is responsible versus who has custody. And both of those can be zero and 100% or anything in between, you know, a shared percentage.
Okay, so let's go to another situation, and these were my ex-clients. Nobody spoke about anything that would impede their son's ability to earn a living. Not a peep, which is why I was so very surprised that I got phone calls a couple years after the divorce was final and the child had graduated from high school. The father and the mother disagreed on what was being identified as crucial elements for the need
right.
of child support.
Right.
So we have things like ADD, ADHD, you know, things like this. I understand, I'm not a medical expert, can be resolved some way, somehow. Special tutoring, and that's where these two people were. Mother said, wait a minute, you're blowing this out of proportion. Yes, I understand that these, I don't know whether it was ADHD or ADD, but I understand how that can look like an influencing factor on his ability to get a job and earn a living and go for additional education, but I don't believe this will render my son incapable of earning a living and living on his own. Dad said the complete opposite. So now they did want to go to mediation before they went to the courthouse. So what do you do when maybe you're on kind of a borderline of possibly you could overcome this with some treatment?
You have a gatekeeping issue. Is this even a child who is incapacitated from earning a living? It's the initial question. Is this even a child for whom adult child support could be ordered? That's your initial, you know, inquiry. And if it was going to court, you might have a career counselor. You might have the doctor's testimony, right? To speak about the limitations. The doctor or the mental health professional would speak about the limitations of this child. And then the vocational expert, the career expert might say, with these limitations, I see this person being able to maintain a job that makes at most this much or at most a part-time job because they cannot emotionally, you know, adjust to full-time or the challenges are too big. So, yeah, you have an initial issue of, is this even a qualifying case? But it's not like you can't address this in mediation. Even if we have some disagreement about how severe are the challenges that this child has. You know, what if we jump to the next question? Okay, let's not decide why, you know, does it qualify for child support or not? What are the needs that are being unmet? What's the issue? How is this child being left without an ability to support themselves, is it that they only need help with something that, you know, they can't meet an expense that's, let's say, $500 a month? Or, you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. My nephew has, he's type 1 diabetic, and so he has the insulin machine attached to him, very severe. And he needs help reading the numbers.
So maybe they may not agree that help is needed for everything in this child's life, but they may agree that, you know what, it's a good idea to have, not a tutor, but, you know, somebody who's available to the child, maybe by FaceTime or whatever. You know what I mean? Some kind of help, some kind of one-on-one help. And maybe they can agree to split that cost. Maybe there's something they can agree on that'll meet the child's need without having to decide the huger, larger issue of, oh my God, is this a disabled child? Remember, too, for some parents, some cultures in particularly, it's not an easy thing to even admit.
It's true. You're so absolutely right. I didn't even think about that.
You have that problem. And sometimes that's also why there's silence. Sometimes there's shame around it.
Right.
You know, parents feel the shame.
Interesting.
Which is so unfair, because then child, you know, gets the help they need. The sooner they can get the help they need, maybe they can get the tools they need to overcome whatever challenge it is. I mean, and in a way, it's like we've all got something.
Yes, we do.
You know?
Don't we? I am very incapacitated in other ways myself, sitting here earning a living.
You know,
Okay, now I thought about this as you were talking. I'm breaking this down even further in terms of where help is needed. So we have two issues. We have ability to earn a living and ability to live independently. So what if they can actually go out and work and maybe a little above the poverty level so they could maybe function and have their own apartment? But what if they can't actually live on their own? What if they can't do the laundry? Maybe reading isn't really something they need in their job. I don't know why it wouldn't be, but I'm thinking of my nephew. But that's very much a part of paying bills, signing a lease. So what if they can go out and work, but they really need to live with somebody? Hybrid.
That may just be considered part of what the need is. In other words, if you're going to go to court or if you're going to try to mediate an adult child support case, in the end, you're going to be talking about how much money do the parents need to pay, right? Or how much does one need to pay the other? So that's going to fit in determining what the payments amount's going to be. So if this child has a special need, which requires somebody to come in once a week, once every 3 days or whatever, to help with the bills or with whatever it is, maybe it's daily, then that's just going to be one of the needs that we discuss sharing the expense of.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay. Okay, very good. I like this, because as you were talking now, I was thinking, okay, I know what the determining factors are that are used in the calculations of just child support, period. So we have father's income, mother's income, but now in this adult child support hybrid situation, we have the adult child actually earning money.
Right.
Where does that factor in? You kind of have just answered that.
Right. And actually, I'm so glad you said that, because maybe I should have been clear about this earlier. There is definitely a child support's determined by a guideline formula, but the law tells us that courts can deviate from the guideline. In other words, the computer program spits out this number, but judges don't have to order that number. People don't have to agree to that number. In fact, the family code says one of the circumstances in which courts are specifically allowed to deviate is in cases in which the children have special medical or other needs that require child support that would be different than the formula amount. So you could put in all the factors in the formula. The formula comes up with a certain number, but that won't necessarily be what the judge orders. They can deviate. And they especially deviate in cases where there are special needs. So, for example, I had a case with an adult child who couldn't earn everything on his own. I mean, he could earn some, but it really wasn't enough to support him having his own apartment, which he could have. He could live on his own. He needed help. One of the parents was pretty often there for help. But he still had, at the end of the day, expenses of a few thousand dollars that couldn't be met. And so you may want to tailor your request. I know that the formula says this amount, but here's the amount I'm asking for, and here's how it makes sense. The child's expenses are, say, $5,000 a month. The child makes enough to cover $2,500. I would like child support so that I pay, you know, whatever, half and half, or I would like the other person to contribute this much. You can ask for an amount that's different from what the computer formula says. You can definitely do that. You know, you would keep in mind certain things, like if my ex-spouse makes three times as much as I do, maybe my request might be, let's pay in proportion to our ability.
Yes.
The court would consider all of this stuff. Yeah. You see, adult child support cases where there are usually special needs, not just what I described, but there also might be additional medical needs, like what you described, needing special apparatus or special.
Right. And those costs changed dramatically. I think it was last year. There was this huge discussion in the medical community. Well, in the citizens community who use medical services for type 1 diabetics, the cost of insulin tripled within a couple months.
Yeah. You know,
so that was crazy. Now my sister, because I know that from my sister, she had to start really looking around for different options, different purveyors of insulin. But the fact that services or products the adult child is using could become difficult to pay.
Yeah. And if you've got families who can't really afford to pay it on their own, the truth is they're going to do like what your sister did, look for services.
So,
you know, they are going to go out and look for services. We're talking about circumstances where there's a dispute, where one parent says to the other parent, please help, please pay a part of it. And that's usually going to happen when one of them has been paying a larger percentage, or the child is living with that one and they want some help from the other parent. If the child is getting the services that they need from, you know, different social programs that are funding it, and the parents don't have a dispute about it, you're never going to see this case in the court. No one's just going to bring it. The government isn't just going to bring it.
Right.
You know, and go after, you know, for an adult child. But it's when they have a dispute. And again, it's when one parent has been paying it, or when the disabled child lives with one parent and that parent wants some support from the other one. That's when you'll see it come up.
Armini, for those people listening who understand how child support works on a regular basis, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we have the resulting number that is provided on a monthly basis, one parent to another, that covers food, shelter, and clothing, which makes sense because the more time a child is with a parent, they will buy more food, the housing has to accommodate the parent, and that parent may take the child shopping. And then there are other miscellaneous expenses that when we write our settlement agreements, cover everything else, computers, cell phones, summer camp, all that stuff. And then parents have to negotiate how to divide those things. So when you go to the adult child situation post-divorce, we still look at those two categories, or do we kind of, at least for a child that's earning their own living,
yes,
we don't break it down like that anymore. We just look at your formula that you used before. This is what the child is earning. this is what this can pay for to support the child. Now, how do the parents have to supplement the rest?
You absolutely can consider both. So in the case that I was speaking about, we asked, which they ultimately ended up settling, which was wonderful. But in trying to think about the, you know, what is the request? What are we asking for? What we asked for was that the parents share the uncovered living expenses that the child's income couldn't cover. So that was in a certain amount. But we also said, let's share 50-50, half of unreimbursed medical expenses. So that we asked for as an ongoing. So whatever the medical expense is, because you may have variation from one month to the other, that's a pretty typical child support order, even in non-adult or disabled child support cases. You have whatever the formula amount is, or if you deviate from the formula, whatever that amount is, plus an order that says half of unreimbursed medical expenses. And you can absolutely do that in this kind of a case as well. You can.
So what if we have one of these heartbreaking situations that unfortunately comes up when you have two parents, one can consistently earn a living and the other has a very difficult time consistently earning a living for whatever reasons.
The parents.
Right. And you have to go to court. How would the court look at the parent who doesn't have the better track record, who has the inconsistent earning track record? I mean, this happens on a normal basis It doesn't have to be adult child support.
I was going to say, you're getting into classic income issues when somebody says, look, this person is not earning income, but they can. And in California, we have a legal duty to support our children. And if it's an adult disabled child, it extends to that child as well. So you get into the classic kind of arguments about that. And interestingly, this is also where the career expert, the vocational expert comes in, because that parent could be evaluated. What is that parent's ability to earn based on their education, experience, and the job market in their area? So you might have a parent who doesn't earn, but has the ability and the opportunity to earn right now because a vocational assessment has determined that. And the court believes your vocational evaluator, you know, you put him on the stand and all that classic stuff. And if the court believes that this parent has both the ability and the opportunity to find a certain kind of job, then they'll do what's called imputing income. Think of imputing like pretending. So you may not make $50,000 a year, but if the court believes that you can, then in putting the numbers into the formula, they'll put in $50,000 for you, even though you don't make it. So you will pay or receive that much less based on you having income of $50,000, having it imputed to you. You're not actually making it.
Right.
But the law is imputing it.
Okay.
You.
So that happens, and still whatever prevented that parent from consistently earning a living still prevents. I know this can go for regular and adult
yes.
child support, but I think an excellent point was brought up. Could you please tell our listeners what happens to that parent that isn't stepping up in getting two jobs to earn their capacity even?
You know, this is kind of...
And this is where is life fair? Is this fair?
Is
this
exactly
not fair? When we get to the fair issue, what do we do?
These are the limitations of the law. You go to court, you get a support order based on income being imputed to the other parent. And the order says, let's say the other parent owes you $700 a month, but that parent doesn't earn it, more importantly, doesn't pay you the $700. What are you left with? You're left with an order. You have this accumulating $700 a month that's owed to you. That's accruing interest at the legal rate of 10%. And what you have in the end is a money judgment. So you might be going to, you know, a lawyer to help you enforce that. Does this person who owes you the money have property? Can you try to get it from the property? Do they have a job where at least you can submit some kind of a garnishment and at least a part of it you can collect? Then you start getting into the whole world of, I have a judgment, I'm owed money, how do I collect it? The person's not paying me. And as far as the rest, you're left with the, is life fair?
I know. And we just have to do the best we can and move forward. I know. Right. At the end of the day, that may be it. But it's nice to know there are a lot of steps to be taken, like looking at other assets and can they be converted into support money?
Yes. I mean, at that point, you really, I would say, you know, go to somebody who does enforcement work, who knows all the details of how can you reach assets? How can, I mean, there's people who do only that.
Who are
there's,
those people?
Oh,
what's
lawyers.
Their title?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
They're, you know, lawyers who
that specialize in that.
I don't think that there's a technical specialization because specialization is a really special word. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The state bar specializes certain lawyers. I'm not sure if there's technically a legal specialization of that. But what I mean is somebody who does that and whose practice is limited to that.
Okay.
You know, if not
have
entirely.
Have you had to use
least,
anybody like that in the past?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've sent, I mean, my forte is not enforcement work. I'm okay. The pre, you know, stuff, the part that leads up to getting the order.
Right.
And I always say, go to somebody who does
okay,
enforcement work. And you can maybe reach, you can reach their assets in this state. You can even reach their assets outside the state or internationally, depending on where. Those are details that that's exactly
right.
What
and
you'd be talking to that person about.
Excellent point, actually, because in the course of a regular divorce and we're having people do their disclosure forms, I'm sure you get this like I do. Well, does it matter? I own a home in England. Yeah, it does matter.
Yes, it does.
Doesn't it just mean what we have here in the United States?
That's
is
right.
Under the United States law, but not so true.
Right.
It's what you own, period, regardless of
yeah.
Where.
Yeah, yeah. And it's totally okay that you don't know that going into it. Just ask. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's, you know, we're not supposed to know everything. That's why we, you know, go to people we trust. We look for the information and see what you can learn about it.
Okay.
And then decide. And let me tell you, part of, in my opinion, the benefit of reaching a mediated result is you may, when people are involved in the decision they make, there's more buy-in and hopefully there's more compliance. And sometimes litigation can be a rabbit hole. You could be going down the rabbit hole of, you know, spending money and the bad feelings, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And there's an ego pushback with those bad feelings of, I'm not going to, whatever, I'm not going to help you. I'm not going to,
I don't
you know
what the
I mean?
Court
there's
says,
a
I'm not going to do it.
Right. Because you've deteriorated, the argument escalates so much, the positions become entrenched so much, our willingness to understand or even listen to what the other person is saying diminishes so much that, oof, like, you know.
I know.
It makes everything harder.
I know.
So if you can reach a result where there's buy-in, especially in a case like this, if you have a disabled child, a child with these kinds of needs, you and your ex-spouse or the other parent, you're probably going to be involved with each other for the rest of your lives. I mean, you would have anyway, if you have kids, you know, hopefully.
Right, and the family grows.
Weddings.
And grandchildren.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But even more intimately and more consistently with a child who has needs every week, every day even. So it's worth trying to find a solution that acknowledges that and the importance of the ongoing relationships.
Right. And I'm glad we're ending with that, because, again, this is a podcast devoted to amicable divorces, but amicable solutions, period. And yes, those decisions, if they're wholeheartedly made, not fake made, just to get out of the mediation and move on, but if they're wholeheartedly made, then it's easier to follow, because you crafted it based on what you both think is important, parents.
Right.
Yeah, rather than what the judge says.
Right.
Yeah.
Hasn't been crammed down your throat. That's
exactly.
Never fun, is it?
Never fun.
Right.
Never. Army, right. This has been wonderful. This has been such a great experience talking with you. Did I not ask you something that you wanted to bring forward by any chance? What do you think? Covered everything.
You know what?
Pretty
I think I'll think of it as soon as we stop recording.
Okay. Well, in that case,
I know, right?
As we all do, when you get in the car and you think of it,
right.
You know that you have an invitation to come back, because anything to do with children is the most important part of any relationship, parental relationship. And I definitely want you back. And now that you are part of our Constructive Uncoupling family, you may come back with ideas for other episodes. I invite you back to do that.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I have found you.
Neat.
This has been a great conversation. So I know some people are going to want to get in touch with you. How do they do that?
Oh, thank you so much. I have an office in West Los Angeles and in Orange County. And I'll give you my West LA number. It's 310-458-0796.
Say it again.
310-458-0796.
But you also have an office in Orange County, so you're probably here more in the Los Angeles
yes.
County area, but can service Orange County.
Yes,
that's
I am.
Right.
And in a way, oddly, thanks to coronavirus, I'm now all over, because I've been doing mediation sessions by Zoom.
Right.
So there's a part of that that's been nice learning, given the circumstance.
I had to learn it
something,
too.
There's some stuff that comes out of...
There's good
right?
stuff that comes out of everything. I wholeheartedly believe that. It's how you use, how we use the challenges in life to reframe something about ourselves in a positive way.
There's
always.
A lesson everywhere, isn't there?
Divorce is a new awakening. It's the last line of every one of my confirmation emails. Divorce is a new awakening. So
that's a good one.
Thank you so much, Armin.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank all of you for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. You can reach me, Judy Weigel, your host, through my email address, Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com. Please share this podcast with your friends. Become subscribers. As I upload the podcast, it will be uploaded to you. And I look forward to our next episode. Take care.